Claire de Lune by Ron's Girl Friday. You look like your mum. Never did really mean you look like your mum. Not exactly. It meant you had her flaxen hair, though you never did have her long, unkempt waves, the ones she tied back fruitlessly, little strands coming untucked as she worked, sneaking out of their bun. The ones you loved to run your fingers through when she let you brush her hair. You wore yours long, though not nearly as long as hers, a shaggy cut that tickled your ears and kissed your shirt collar. Mom and Daddy probably wouldn't have cared if you had worn it longer. But there was that one time when you were 5, when, in a fit of conformity, you demanded that your hair be cut just like that Muggle boy's down the lane. Mom obliged, and you hated it. Hated the stiffness, the harsh, bristly feel against your fingertips when you ran them across the back. You grew it out again, but not like Mum's. Never quite like Mum's, more like Daddy, who wore his just above the shoulders. It swished about your cheeks and your chin as you ran, shiny, healthy, and long, for a boy. It meant you had the same little dimple in your left cheek when you smiled. But the mole that appeared next to your nose was only ever that, just a mole. They called the spot above Mum's lip a beauty mark. It meant you had her distinguished facial features. Though your eyes were always Daddy's, you, thankfully, did not get his rather large and somewhat misshapen nose. You had the gentle angle of Mum's jaw, the nose that came a little too much to a point, the cleft chin that had always given her face that beautiful peculiarity, that bit of strangeness that took her beyond the conventional, into the captivating. You walked in that twilight between plain and pretty, for a boy. Mom told you once that when you were born you looked just like Daddy. It was silly, of course. You'd seen photographs of yourself as a baby, and you'd just looked like a baby. But somewhere along the way, you'd taken after her, and as far back as you could remember, people occasionally commented and praised, at parties, in shops, walking down the lane. "He takes after you more and more every day, Pandora." Mum would laugh and point out Daddy's eyes, and she always said that when you laughed, you looked the most like Daddy. And when you were deep in thought, you did rather look like her. "But when you were sleeping," she said, "when your face was peaceful and still, especially when the moon shone through your window just right, that was when you looked the most like you." After Mum died, people searched your face eagerly for her ghost. Oma and Opa, Daddy's business contacts, family friends you saw perhaps once a year. And you supposed they thought it comforted you as much as it did them. "You look so much like your mum." Daddy searched your face too, and sometimes you thought he might be on the verge of saying it, but he never did, not back then. But then, the Raxberts were particularly bad for a year or two after she died. It didn't bother you that they said it. They meant well, even if they were wrong. You didn't really look just like her. You'd confirmed that fact in a mirror 1,000 times. But it was a nice thought, all the same. Maybe when you got older, you would look like her. At least, you wished you could. The peculiar thing was, you also didn't look like you. You'd have liked to see how you looked when you were sleeping, to see what she had always seen, but you hadn't worked out how to do that yet. Maybe when you got older, you decided, maybe then you would look like you. At least, you wanted to. It was the spring before you started at Hogwarts when the thought occurred to you that the reason you didn't look like you was that you weren't you at all. You pondered this carefully, examined its angles and its curves. You laid your cheek against the pillow, pretending to slumber, a mirror propped next to your face, and you opened your eyes rapidly, hoping to catch your reflection still asleep. You couldn't, but you realized it didn't matter. The more you considered, the less you could deny it. No, indeed. You were not you at all, and you hadn't been for 11 years. You padded downstairs one evening to Daddy's workroom, standing patiently on the landing until he looked up from his editing. "I'm not Linus," you said, as calmly and reasonably as if announcing you weren't particularly hungry. "No," Daddy agreed after a long moment's silence. "I'm afraid you're right. Is that why there have been so many Nargles around lately?" You hadn't even considered the Nargles, but it made so much sense now.
"Yes, I think so."
"Well then," he waited patiently, hands folded in his lap. "Who are you?" You thought for a few minutes, pulling a loose thread from the sleeve of your jumper. How could you know who you were if you didn't even know what you looked like? But then your eye was drawn to the window, where the moon was just beginning to climb above the horizon, and you remembered what Mum had said about your face, peaceful and real in the moonlight.
"Luna. I'm Luna."
Daddy admitted to you that he didn't know the first thing about raising a girl, and you thought that was only fair, considering you hardly knew the first thing about how to be one. At that moment, you missed Mum just as keenly as the day she died. He asked if perhaps you ought to have new clothes to start, but that didn't interest you much. You weren't especially fond of the dresses or skirts you'd seen other little girls wearing in the village. Whenever Mum had worn Muggle clothes, it was most often jeans and dungarees, faded t-shirts when she was experimenting, and billowing blouses when she was not, and she'd looked perfectly lovely. You decided you were happy with what you had at the time, though at some point it would be a good idea to replace your too short striped pajamas with polka-dotted ones. Preferably the correct length, of course, but the polka-dot part was most important. You applied yourself to the crucial task of growing your hair longer. It was an inexcusably slow process, an inconvenience, frankly. Didn't your hair realize you hadn't got all day? It was your hair's stubborn refusal to grow faster that made you second-guess yourself, a brief but frightening moment on a hot July afternoon. If this was who you were, then why didn't you look like you? Your Hogwarts letter came the very next day, addressed to Miss Luna Lovegood, and the day after that, you could have sworn your hair had grown an inch overnight. What you did love was jewelry, and you asked if perhaps you could wear some of Mum's, and you could see in Daddy's eyes that he wanted so badly to give that to you, but you also saw the pain there at the thought of disturbing anything in her jewelry box. Whether it was because he couldn't bear reopening the wound, or whether he worried that, being young still, you might lose or damage something precious, you couldn't tell, but you simply said, "Okay, Daddy," and set about creating your own baubles, stringing together the bottle corks you'd amassed that you'd always known would come in handy someday. Mum never was one for dainty jewelry, and she was never interested in gems, drawn instead to enamel and resin and wood, unpolished stones, things wrapped in wire, things that jingled and jangled and swung merrily about her neck. And you thought she would have loved your necklace, would have asked you to make one for her, too. You loved the gentle weight of it about your neck, the way you always knew it was there, a part of you. But when Daddy first saw you wearing it, he sat deep in thought before rising wordlessly from his chair and exiting the room, returning moments later with Mum's jewelry box.
"It's yours," he said, setting it before you. "She would have wanted you to have it. It's always been yours. I'm sorry, I was wrong."
You pored over the contents, the chains and beads falling through your fingers, bangles stacked from wrist to elbow, just like you'd done when you were small. And it seemed you could recall each and every time she had worn each piece. They were yours, indeed, but it seemed it was not your time to wear them. They still felt so much like her, and your handmade necklace was you. But you paused upon a pair of earrings, the ones she'd picked up in some Muggle shop in London, and remembered the day she'd worn them home, not saying a word, waiting for you to notice.
"Mummy, you've got dirigible plums hanging on your ears."
They were her favorites because they were your favorites. You pocketed the dirigible plum baubles before closing the box
and tucking it safely underneath your bed. Daddy didn't argue when you asked to have your ears pierced, but the witch in Diagon Alley wouldn't do it. Not for a little boy. And Daddy didn't know enough to try to navigate the muggle shops. Luckily, Gloria Seo knew how to pierce ears, you found out in third year, when you finally admitted to her that you wanted it done. She did yours right there in your dormitory as you squeezed Margot Folly's hand. Gloria didn't dare try it the magical way, fearing she'd blow your ears off. She had to do it the way she'd learnt from her muggle cousin, who'd done it for Gloria behind her parents' back, with a needle and cork, numbing your ears with a cube of ice. Gloria was the kindest of your classmates, and she'd always offered to share her makeup with you whenever the other girls were getting done up. You didn't care too much about makeup then, just as well, because teachers liked to dock points for excessive makeup, and on anyone under fourth year, that really meant any at all. But you did decide once to try her nail polish, an ethereal blue, for Ravenclaw, that looked like you'd dipped your fingers in liquid moonlight. You'd never considered yourself vain, but when, at last, you were able to put on your dirigible plum earrings, very carefully, face close to the mirror as you navigated the process, you pulled back and studied the effect with satisfaction. There, in the mirror, was you. Really you. Your hair well past your shoulders now, beloved baubles adorning your ears, your cork necklace around your neck. It reminded you who you were, and it was certainly no coincidence that you hadn't had any trouble from the Nargle since you'd started wearing it. And while there was no moonlight in the room, and as far as you knew, you weren't asleep, for the first time, you were certain you were seeing what Mom had always seen when she'd watched you sleeping peacefully. A curious ache came over you. Not bad, simply a persistent tugging. And it took you a moment, studying your face, its angles and curves, to realize why. "There you are," you whispered, touching your fingertips to the cool glass, and you wished that somebody who'd known her could have been there at that moment to say it, because it was true. She was there, in the shape of your jaw, in your curious chin, in dirty blonde tangles and butterbeer corks and dirigible plums, in all these things that had always been a part of you. No matter whether you wore trousers or makeup, no matter the state of your hair, no matter that you had Daddy's eyes, she was always there, and she always had been, the one who'd seen you when you hadn't seen yourself. And now that you finally did see, you'd never lose either of you again. How wonderful to be seen when you were awake, a moon in the daylight hours.